Good morning and welcome to Sunday Take for Sunday, May 3rd, 2026. And we're going to kind of shift gears a little bit this week and really talk about the mood of Minnesota. You know, it has struck me over the last several months that the mood of Minnesota has really been challenged. But there's one thing that brings us together. There's one thing that we find unity in and energy and joy. And that is when our sports teams win. Now, of course, not everybody's a sports fan, but the range of sports we have to offer has also connected different demographics. Women's sports has grown sports fans in key areas. And history of Minnesota sports, as awful as it is, are oftentimes a great way to kind of connect and remember. But this past week, it was clear that the mood of the state changed when the Wild and the Wolves won. The Wild will have their first second round game tonight. There's two people who observe the history of sports in Minnesota that I'd like to talk to. So we're going to this week. The first one will be Dan Winnesota, a Twitter account that recounts all the history of Minnesota sports. And the other one is Sports Take author Howard Sinker. When we come back, Dan Winnesota will join us to talk about the history of sports in Minnesota. What are the moments and how he catalogs them? I'm Blois Olson. You're listening to Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO. We are back on Sunday Take. My first guest is Dan Winnesota. If you don't follow him on social media, you should, because he will find parts of the hard drive of your brain about Minnesota sports that you forgot existed. And it really kind of tickles both the brain and the memories. But I thought after this week, what he'll catalog from this week that may show up in 5, 10, or 15 years as he documents Minnesota sports. Dan, thanks for joining me.
Hey, thanks for having me. Nice to finally talk to you.
Yeah, no, I've followed you for a long time, but just look, you have an amazing ability to go find the front page or the headline or the stat. Where did this interest in the history of Minnesota sports come from, and how did you decide to document it?
So I don't know if you have ever seen the 30 for 30 Believeland.
No.
It's about Cleveland and their sports misery, and they kind of lay out the filmmakers lay out their case with these seminal events, like, you know, the fumble, the John Elway's drive, the all these things. And as they're laying out their case, you know, they use some things that I'm sitting here watching it as a Minnesota sports fan going, wait a second, we've got one worse than that. Like, they talk about this trade of Rocky Colavito that completely destroyed the team. Like, how do you argue trades with a Minnesota sports fan? We have the Herschel Walker trade, you know, it's right. The worst trade ever. Right. And then one of the things they talk about too is the Cleveland Cavaliers being saved from the evil owner Ted Stepien by the Gunn brothers. And they literally show in the movie the Gunn brothers with a North Stars flag behind them because they own the North Stars at the time,
yeah,
right?
Right.
And so I'm just like, I got to write a rebuttal to this, right? So I came up, I actually wrote a letter to the filmmaker, which he eventually, like, you know, gave me a tip of the cap to, but never really responded to. But I laid out my case, and it kind of turned into like an amateur mockumentary on YouTube, and I called it Winnesota, like kind of like their Believeland, where yep. Winnesota, and that's kind of where my name came from, and that's kind of how it started.
Well, I think that's something any Minnesota sports fan can relate to, and I would say I have had my own moments, which I've talked about publicly, which, you know, after the 98 Vikings, I swore off an emotional connection to professional sports. Now, it's not been completely true because I've invested in season tickets. And once you're invested, then you're emotionally invested. If your money, your mind follows your money. And the idea that I realized just how after that moment, the state was in this depression for days. And I was like, you guys, it's just a game. And so I offer a 12-step program so people can get off the Vikings addiction of Sundays.
Right.
Because the other thing I learned was, you know, a lot of those Sundays in the fall are beautiful. And they're our last Sundays to get outside or for me to play golf. And so
right.
And so the connection to sports is big. just stop and pause and talk about how you've started to think about this past week with the Wolves in the Wild advancing to the second round, which in most big sports cities isn't worth massive celebration. But here, I felt a shift in the whole mood. There was a bounce in people's steps. And I thought, you know, I want to talk about Dan because in 5 or 10 years, he's going to remind us of the joy we felt this week. But what do you look at in a week like this as you think about Minnesota sports history?
Well, part of it is, you know, I'm kind of snarky about it because it's like I heard somewhere on the radio yesterday, so they were talking about the Wolves series being a legacy game for some of these players. And I'm like, this is the one thing that you're going to look back on at the end of their career is a first round playoff win. So, but, you know, and then on the same note, it's like, We're in uncharted territory here. Well, that's not true. We found out this morning that Minnesota has done this before. It was, I think, 1968, the North Stars and the Minnesota Muskies were both in the playoffs at the same time, but they were, it was a month apart. So it really kind of isn't the same feeling. And the Muskies were already on their way out of town. There were rumors they were moving anyways. So, I mean, just completely different uncharted territory here. I mean, I'm excited. I'm anxious. I don't even know how to describe it. I mean, the more we win, the more my anxiety goes up. Like, cause I try not to get myself, like you said, I try not to get myself too invested. And that's kind of like what this whole Minnesota thing is just, you know, it's kind of a snarky way to laugh about it instead of getting so upset. Cause for me, it was the 2009 Vikings that broke me. You know, when I had to write about that for the book, I hadn't gone back and watched that game or anything, and I had to go back and watch it to write about it, and it was painful. It's hard to be invested and to get your heart broken as much. It's like an abusive relationship. I don't mean to, you know, joke about abusive relationships, but that's kind of what it is with Minnesota sports fans and our teams, you know.
Well, I think your anxiety, and you know, obviously I cover mostly politics, but there's more and more anxiety in politics too, and so This idea that I've latched onto for the last 10 or 15 years is what's the mood of Minnesota? Yeah. You can have some snark with it, but the reality is that you write about it, you follow it, you look at it. When you talk to everyday people, not the sports writers, not the rubes who are like all sports all the time, what do they talk about when it comes to Minnesota sports? How do they connect to your stories and your writings and your posts?
I think a lot of them are way more positive than I am. They always, you know, come like, cause I work at a school and a lot of the teachers there, like a couple of them are Lynx and Timberwolves season ticket fans. Like we got a couple Loons season ticket fans. And one of my paraprofessionals that works in my room, she was very excited about the Wild and, you know, and asking me what I think is going to happen. And I'm like, you don't want to know what I think is going to happen. But yeah, they're, I think most people that aren't snarky and jaded and bitter like me, they're pretty positive. And you know what? We need that though. You need those positive people. You can't have curmudgeons, in all of us, you know?
One of the things that I said in my open was just how sports audiences have broadened themselves. And you brought up the Loons and what I grew up playing soccer, played into college. And yet I've never been a huge soccer fan. And so when MLS came along, I followed it a little, but it wasn't, you know, I always thought when I was younger, I would keep following soccer. But when I go to a Loons game, I see a demographic that I don't see at a Twins game. I see a demographic that I don't see at a Timberwolves game or a Wild game or a Vikings game. And then you think about the Frost and the Lynx, and you start to realize that the more we have grown sports, especially women's sports, the more we have broadened the audience and like with the Frost being in town, being successful. I mean, even in our own family, we have my son's girlfriend plays in the PWHL. I attended 3 PWHL games this year. That didn't happen before. I know the players. It's different. Can you just reflect on just how you've seen those women's sports attract different fans who maybe weren't into teams before?
Well, I mean, I coached softball and girls basketball for 20 years. And, you know, when I started, we'd have trouble getting gyms. We'd have trouble getting, you know, equal treatment and things like that. And now, you know, you're seeing all these women's sports on TV. I mean, the Vixen football team, they play at 6 p.m. today. The Frost are on TV right now. It's 4-4 right now in the third. I know you're going to have this on Sunday, but I mean, it's just incredible the growth of women's sports and those opportunities for girls in sports. I think it's incredible. It's awesome.
Have you found when you write about teams like, you know, the Saints or the Fighting Saints, that is the history of sports, that you pull out things that people forgot or didn't know? What do people talk about when they see your books in the history?
Boy, that's a good question. I think sometimes they get frustrated that I bring up bad memories sometimes. But, you know, sometimes I find little nuggets that have been lost, you know, like the fact that we were just talking about this early this morning, the Gunn brothers, they had a chance to have an expansion NBA team in the early 80s with Dallas when Dallas Mavericks came into the league. But the Gunn brothers, they decided that they to withdraw their bid because they thought the expansion fee was too high. And then so Dallas was the only team that came into the league, and then they built Reunion Arena. And then the Gunn brothers bought the Cavaliers like 3 years later for like double the price. Now, had the Gunn brothers, you know, brought an expansion NBA team here in the 80s, the whole story might be different, you know, and just that's kind of lost to history. People don't realize those little things.
You know, I think you bring up a good memory or a good point there, because if you think about the Lakers that we lost to LA, the North Stars mm-hmm. that we lost to Dallas, do you think we covet those teams a little more after we lost them, or at least older people who remember that?
Boy, that's a tough question. I struggled when the North Stars left. Obviously, I'm not old enough to remember the Lakers.
Right.
But the North Stars, they were my heart and soul. I used to go to games all the time. So for those of us that were around, I don't think that we remember them more. You know what I mean? I think we remember them the same. I think it's harder for it almost kind of like seems like an opposition sometimes. Like if I post something about the North Stars, you know, some people are like, well, let it go. We're yeah. on the Wild now. And it's like, well, it's history. You can still appreciate both things. You know, both things can be true and you can enjoy both of them. And I think some people struggle with that. Like it's an insult to their fandom for some reason. I don't know.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because earlier this week, Vanita, after the Wild won, was talking to Josh Wheeler, one of the producers here, and Josh didn't know the North Stars. So he doesn't relate right. to that.
Yeah.
And so he's just all Wild all the time. And Vanita's like, right. yeah, no, we've been through some of the, like, that's why the Wild are important. I think obviously we can debate stadiums, which will be certainly another topic on this show over the next couple of years. but you look at what they do in unifying people, and you know, on a show we talk about differences a fair amount. Right. Sports are there. As we wrap here, what would you say the future of the bear with me, because look at sports different now, right? Like we all watch it, but there's this whole social channel, there's the reaction. And I just think that you probably have a unique perspective on at least the social media mood of Minnesotans when these wins happen or these losses happen.
Yeah.
And we all know the ups and downs of emotions on social media. What do you see, and how will that kind of shape, you think, the way we think about these things in the future?
I think there's always going to be people that are going to be hopeful no matter what. And there's always going to be those that are like, yeah, they blew it again. I don't think it's going to change anybody's perspectives. I just think that some people are just kind of stuck in those ways and gonna love them or hate them no matter what. I don't know if that makes sense. Sorry.
It's okay. And last thing, what's your favorite good sports Minnesota sports memory?
Oh man. My wife would tell you it's when Brett Favre was coming to the Vikings, I was running through the house screaming, and then the Greg Lewis in the back of the end zone. I got so excited. I stood up and I almost passed out. Like I got dizzy because I was so excited. So probably Brett Favre, my wife would rat me out about that one.
Well, keep your emotions in check on this playoff run, and I know we'll talk down the line. Thanks, Dan.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for having me.
When we come back, more on Minnesota sports, what we know, what we follow, and the spectrum of sports from college to the pros and the audience for all of it with Howard Sinker. I'm Blois Olson. You're listening to Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO. We're back on Sunday Take. As I talked about in the opening segment, we just talked about with Dan, Minnesota sports is something that brings people together. It's a commonality. This week, the mood of Minnesota shifted when we won two playoff series. Now, Minnesota fans aren't necessarily satisfied by that, but it's one of the things that keeps us from arguing about the little stuff. Joining me now, Howard Sinker. Howard's a longtime former Star Tribune sports editor. He now writes Sports Take at thedailyagenda.com. It's a must read. And we've had plenty of people, Howard, over the months you've been doing it, say to me, you know, I'm not a sports person, but I like how Sports Take makes me smart enough on sports. So it's a well-read product, and people should check it out. Howard, how long were you at the Star Tribune? And in the time you covered sports at the Star Tribune, how did Minnesota change in the way it watched sports, followed sports, and what did you take in during those times?
You know, counting everything, counting reporting and editing, I was at the Star Tribune for about 45 years.
Wow.
And the best answer I can give you is just the bulk of sports that we have today, the volume and the quality. We have, you know, the addition of women's sports. Pro soccer has become a thing that's really much more pervasive than it was when I first started. And the businesses, the sports business, has just grown so much, and the attention we pay to them is that much greater. It's really hard to avoid, and really, as somebody who worked in sports journalism, still does sports journalism, it's more about picking and choosing the things that you want to follow at any given time. And the Wild and the Wolves are giving us two really, really good things to follow.
When you say that about kind of the expansion, one of my earlier observations was that the audience for sports has changed, and it's not exclusively women's sports, but I said that the crowd at the Loons game is a different crowd than at the Timberwolves game, and that it seems to have broadened the audience. What do you see in, you know, just there's a hyper coverage of high school sports, youth sports, college sports. I know you're close to McAllister. How do you see the way in which people interact with sports on a daily basis?
You know, everybody can find their spots, Blois. With soccer, you know, the like you say, the Loons crowd is a crowd that may not go to a Twins game or a Vikings game. But there are some interesting crossovers. We're Lynx season ticket holders. A lot of our Lynx friends are also soccer people or Twins people. You can't follow everything right now.
Right.
But you know, when you make a choice and you dive in, it's great fun. I mean, my wife is, you know, the Lynx and the WNBA expert in the house who can do facial recognition of about 80% of the league. So we go to games and she woman-splains to me. And it's great fun. You know, I know a little bit about strategy. She knows everything about the league.
Go back a few decades, if you will, when you had to call in scores or teletype in your story. And, you know, it was about reporting on the game. How has the digital world, the instantaneous social world, changed the way you think people watch sports?
You know, in a way, it's kind of a throwback because the digital world lets us tell people what's happening right away in real time. What's going on now is what we used to do, except it's on steroids. Basically, you have sports reporters, you have fans, you have people on X and on Blue Sky and using other social media platforms, not only to tell you what's going on in real time, but to tell you what they think. And you can follow things now without watching an entire game. One of the interesting things I found out from talking to college students who I work with at McAllister, a lot of them get their sports information or follow a team not by watching the games. They go to Instagram to get highlights. They can go to YouTube to get highlights. And to them, it's perfectly natural not to make the commitment to watch the whole game, which to me is a totally alien concept. I mean, I sat through the Twins game Saturday. And yeah, that's just the way I still process things the way I used to. But I also have the shortcut when I need it.
I'm sorry you sat through that Twins game on Saturday because I saw they were winning 3-2, and then I looked back and saw that Toronto had 11 runs and the Twins still had three. So I apologize for your Saturday afternoon.
Thank you. True story. The couple sitting next to us at all, the 8 runs in the eighth inning happened so quickly that the guy sitting next to us turned to us and said, "Did they really just score 8 runs?" And that's it. It was a disaster. It was really about the worst 10 minutes of baseball I've ever watched. And I go back to the 1980s in terms of covering the Twins. So that's
That's
that's not a
saying
hot
something.
take. That's reality.
Talk about the way in which relationships with the athletes has changed. Obviously, they're just mega stars, they're paid millions. And at some point, you'd think that that would turn fans off, but it seems to personality seems to draw them in more. And they obviously can have their own media, their social media, there's plenty of channels. Do you think that gives the fans or the public even more connection to the athletes?
In many ways, it does, especially because the media has changed where athletes and teams can control their messages a lot more. It used to be that if you wanted to learn about, let's say, Kent Herbeck with the Twins, you read a feature in the Star Tribune or you watched something on the TV news. Now, between the internet, between their ability to communicate via platforms like the Players Tribune or their own TikToks. I mean, look at StudBuds with the links. Look, Natasha Heideman and Courtney Williams. They didn't become media stars. They didn't become national women's basketball figures because anything that traditional media did. They did it on their own. And the mainstream media might not like it, but it's a terrific thing.
Where do you see the market going? You've covered stadiums. We have renovations. We have debates. That's where the intersection from sports and politics comes. When you were at the Star Tribune, how did you look at those issues with regard to how you covered a team?
I really wanted to be part of the business angle of the team. Let's say the Twins sales or expansion or the things that I thought were really bigger than the game. I don't know that that's the prevailing sentiment right now. And I think part of it is sports journalists who cover the games just feel so pressed to keep up with everything and to meet our demand for things on a 24/7 basis. That sometimes the business parts of things take a back seat and slide and really don't get covered as closely as I think they should. And I think that's one of the things we can do with Sports Take. That's one of the things I look at. What can I tell you that nobody else is telling you? And that can be pro sports, that can be the Gophers, and that can be some of the high school situations and small college situations that we've been writing about in the newsletter.
My guest is Howard Sinker. He's a longtime retired Star Tribune editor. He now writes Sports Take as part of the Daily Agenda. Howard, you the angles you bring it up. One of the things I've always observed with sports coverage and sports journalism is, unless an athlete gets in trouble publicly or really volunteers information, the journalists who cover the teams and cover the athletes, they may know these athletes much better than they even lead on in their coverage. They have relationships. Is there more transparency that should be done in sports journalism?
I think there should be. I want to. And again, going back, again to the years when I was reporting on sports, if you maintain an arm's length relationship, but you're a professional, I really think that you get more stuff, that more good stuff that serves your readers than if you're perceived as a cheerleader. And if you're perceived as somebody who is acting more as an advocate for the players than the fans' window to a team. And that was just something that was always in the back of my head. There were times when players were not happy, or management wasn't happy with things that I wrote or things that I supervised as an editor, but I was as transparent as day in terms of letting them know what we were doing and why we were doing it.
When you think about the connection, the community, when you see people read or talk about sports, what does it bring out in them from our, for our state, for our community? What are the emotions that you see either from the results of the games or the stories about the athletes or the folks involved with teams?
Yeah, I think Minnesota has a really healthy attitude towards sports. We like them a lot. We follow them. We get upset when things don't go the way we want them to, but 15 minutes later, we're on to something else. And you focus on and remember the good things. You focus on the triumphs, and in Minnesota, you better focus on whatever good you can find, because no, we have not had beyond the Lynx and beyond the Minnesota Frost championships in the last decade and reasons for a parade. I mean, you don't get a parade for just making the wild card round or getting eliminated in the first round of the playoffs.
Earlier this week, we were talking about how even generationally, you know, nobody remembers the Minneapolis Lakers barely, but also nobody, the younger generation wasn't here for the North Stars. So they really connect to the Wild. That's their team, or the Timberwolves. Just for our listeners who might be a little younger, bring us back to 1987 and 1991 when the Twins won the World Series. What did it mean to the community? What did it feel like, and how long did that feeling last?
You know, everything stopped. It was all people did for a week while the World Series was going on. When the Twins eliminated Detroit in the 1987 American League Championship Series, 40,000 people turned up at the Metrodome the night of the clinching game to greet the team when it came back from Detroit. And nobody really expected that to happen. They knew there was going to be a celebration. Maybe 10,000 people would show up. Maybe people would line the route and honk some horns. It was like a sellout for a game. And I was sitting in the dugout, and there were other Twins. There were Twins officials there and a couple of players. And we were watching the Metrodome fill up, and it was stunning. It's what happens when you invite six people to your barbecue, and 600 show up because they know because they know you're great with the grill.
And as you look at today's environment, not just, I know you don't just follow sports, I know you've covered all the news. Are there things that you think, as a community, as a state, we should look at, the way we look at sports, that might connect us differently rather than, you know, the banter back and forth about the issue of the day?
You know, the thing about sports is it's not polarizing. It's, nobody uses sports to make a point about something bigger, to show disrespect for the person they're arguing with. And if there's a lesson, maybe that's it. I have friends who believe in things that absolutely confound me, and I have acquaintances like that. And I can draw the line. I draw the line at some things that people say, which are kind of like non-starters for a relationship or a friendship. But my rapport with people goes most of the way across the board, and that's a lot of what I was exposed to through sports. You are working, you know, athletes come from so many different backgrounds. management comes from so many different backgrounds. And if you take the time to say, hey, I'll shut up and listen, I still learn something every time I talk to a coach or an athlete, and to other fans who know more about a sport than I do.
Howard Zinker, author of Sports Take, longtime journalist at the Star Tribune, before you so kindly volunteered to launch Sports Take at the Daily Agenda. Thanks for joining me on Sunday Take.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
When we come back, this week's take, it's not political. Welcome back to Sunday Take. Tomorrow night on Monday night from 5 to 7, I want to call out that here on News Talk 830 WCCO, we're going to have a special forum that we've put together on Minnesota's hospitals, that they are in critical condition. And we've heard a lot about HCMC, so we'll touch on that. But it seems as though there's some structural long-term issues. We also need to deal with it. So from 5 to 7, we'll have four panels of conversations about Minnesota's hospitals, what we can do. And it starts with leaders, people from around the state, and then ends with lawmaker reaction and solutions. And so I'd urge you to tune into that from 5 to 7 Monday night. This week's take is different. Different in that as I go through these weeks of politics and I reflect on the way this year started and the way that it continues and the intensity that will be the campaigns for this show, for our coverage, that there was this moment, this day that carried on for a couple more days. And that was when the Wild and the Wolves won this week. It was like Minnesota won. This weekend, the Star Tribune had a story about how other states and conservative causes are suggesting that in Wisconsin, for instance, you don't want to make Wisconsin more like Minnesota. And it's really easy or simple to focus on the challenges our state has had. But the reality is, it is moments like when the Wolves and the Wild win that we come together, that people have a bounce in their step the next day, that your algorithm changes away from politics and maybe towards sports. And maybe there are positive sports memories that get the different kind of dopamine going in us. As we scroll social media, as we watch the news, as we talk to our friends and our neighbors, whether it's the Kentucky Derby at my neighbor's house, which is an annual event, or the Frost in the playoffs, or the Lynx season starting, the Twins struggling, the Vikings and their quarterback controversy. It's a conversation, it's a debate that isn't decisive or divisive. It's also rarely decisive, by the way. But it doesn't divide us, it connects us. And I'd like your ideas on what are the other things that connect us, our kids, our schools, without it being always a debate, without it being a they are wrong, I am right, I know better, they messed it up, we need to do this, we need to do that. As the legislature goes through these next few weeks, and I've watched closer than maybe even other years to see these dynamics, the lack of relationships at the legislature is a problem. But the sports piece gets everybody to have at least some common thread of able to talk. As I talked to Dan Winnesota about the broadening of the audience from the loons to the women's sports teams to even fans that didn't know the North Stars, and those who certainly knew the Lakers when they were in Minnesota are, let's just say, old. So as we go through this year, let's find those conversations that unite us rather than argue. How do we find them? And if this week we've learned that sports can be that thing that puts a smile on our face, even though we didn't get as much sleep, let's lean into it. And when you find yourself at an event or arguing or at a family function and it's getting a little hot, maybe just throw in a sports conversation to cool things down. Either that or a good joke, because we need to laugh more. I'll be with Vanita Monday through Thursday from at 6:20. We'll be back next week with the next Sunday take. There's a lot of conventions. We'll have a couple special editions this week, I'm sure, on CD2 and the end of the legislature. Follow along at thedailyagenda.com. I'm your host, Blaise Olson. Until next week, that's the Sunday take.